This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. We're going to talk about a few of the big stories from across the state, not the least of which is a $25 billion surplus that the state could potentially be facing next year when the legislature returns. I caught up with Tim Harden from Texans for Fiscal Responsibility to talk about what that could mean for taxpayers, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, public schools have been hitting the headlines hard this week as some districts across the state have faced parents fighting against pornographic material in those school libraries. I caught up with Aaron Anderson to talk about that story, as well as some others earlier this week. Check it out. Aaron, you have covered a number of big stories in public education, in public schools across the state this week. And I want to run through a few of those. And I want to start down in South Texas with La Jolla ISD. This is a district down in the Rio Grande Valley that you've covered before, covered some scandalous behavior coming out of there. What's the latest developments there?
Well, the latest development is the rumor that the Texas Education Agency might actually be stepping in to monitor or oversee the district, because now two of their school board trustees recently resigned in the last couple of months after pleading guilty to federal public corruption charges. They had an assistant superintendent also swept up in this latest crime wave. That's really just nothing new, unfortunately, down in La Jolla.
Yeah, and this is a school district that really first came to prominence, at least in my mind, just a few years ago. This was the same district, right, that was wanting to use taxpayer funds essentially to build a water park for the school district. The legislature actually had to come in and try to slap that down.
They actually did it. They found an extra $20 million in their regular budget and said, hey, a water park would be fun. The thing about La Jolla, it's a very low-income district, and so they get like almost 90% of their money through the redistribution from other districts and federal money. Mm-hmm. So for them to have this extra money with other taxpayers helping to send it there to educate their kids and deciding they're going to build this fun theme park instead was a big scandal. So they spent the $20 million. The superintendent at the time, Aldo Benavides, ended up resigning kind of over the backlash over this thing. She was making $340,000 a year at the time in this low-income district, by the way. But a year later, she ran for school board. She's now the school board president in La Jolla ISD, one of the five remaining. And what they wanted to do last week is the five left wanted to appoint two new trustees to replace the ones that are going to the federal pen. Even though they have more than 2 years left on their term, normally this would be an elected thing. They sort of backed mm-hmm. off that. That was, I think, one of the things that was raising eyebrows at the state level, that they were trying to keep circling their wagons, because the rumor is that the arrests are not done in La Jolla ISD.
Oof, and we'll be watching that as more information comes out of that district. In a little bit of better news, though, you were in Granbury ISD this week, as there was really a citizen victory there, in a sense, where this was a district, one of many districts across the state now, where parents have been fighting against pornographic material in the schools. That district has been relatively compliant as far as dealing with the parents and trying to create a process. And they actually then revealed these books that were taken out, and I think a lot of people on the left were disappointed.
They actually were, because they had ginned this up as some giant book burning of, you know, this wide range of, you know, classic literature that children must have access to in their school libraries. Of course, Granbury, they simply were responding to their community and to the, of course, the directive that came from the governor about wanting to weed out some of this sexually explicit, literally pornographic material that somehow has made its way onto school library shelves. It's like, let's find them. The parents were looking. They're like, hey, here's some titles. Check these out. So at a school board meeting in January, the superintendent got on a sort of a viral video saying, the governor says we need to get these out. Our district agrees these shouldn't be here. And we're doing it. We're getting staff and parents and community members together. We're going to take a look. and we're going to get rid of the egregious stuff. That blew up. People on the left, national media was covering them. The ACLU sent them a threatening letter. Don't you dare take these books off the shelves. In the end, though, they ended up taking 8 books out of the school libraries. The 8 were on display for the public to see what their content was. Mm-hmm. Earlier this week, I was there. A couple other members of the media were there looking around disappointedly that there weren't protesters and signs, and apparently they, you know, big bonfire flames or whatever. So they did their job. They have a process in place. It's going to be a continuing ongoing process of the district listening to parents, taking a reasonable, timely look at this material and taking out stuff that is clearly not age appropriate for young kids to be looking at in school.
Yeah. All right. What happened to Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, right? And in Fredericksburg ISD, you also have reported this week that similarly, parents have been fighting this pornographic material in the schools, and they're experiencing a victory here as well.
Right. Just on Monday, they had a school board meeting that was very successful. The parents had organized pretty quickly, again, submitting the items that were in the library that they thought needed to be looked at. And they had a receptive audience in their new superintendent. So he quickly acted in a similar fashion as Granberry, say, hey, if our policies aren't covering this, we need to update our policies so that we can do this. And so that's what they did on Monday night. The parents had come in, like many parents are doing, they were reading excerpts of some of these books. So it's clear for everyone to hear that this is not appropriate for kids. And the district voted on and unanimously passed some new policies that the superintendent put forward that will make it a little more streamlined for parents to put the information forward that they think needs to be looked at for it to get reviewed and acted on one way or the other in a quick fashion. And Superintendent Rodriguez noted, he said, look, it's already in our policy that school officials have the authority, the discretion on some of these things that are pervasively vulgar, they call it. And that's a sort of a polite term for pornographic, to immediately take those off the shelves because they're clearly inappropriate and unsuitable for school kids.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine, right? Like what kind of people, who are the people that are trying to fight to keep these books in schools?
Well, in Fredericksburg, the local newspaper and the county Democrat Party, Gillespie Democrats, took out a paid advertisement in this local paper that had been sort of mocking the parents for as book banners and whatnot. They took out an ad saying, oh, don't let a few extremists, get books out of our shelves. We trust our school officials to make these decisions. Well, guess what? That's what they're doing. I mean, they're listening to parents and in consult with the parents, making those decisions. So there are actually people in the ACLU, they make money on these lawsuits. They said so right in their threatening letter to Granberry. Mm-hmm. So it's to their interest, but they're trying to conflate pure sexually explicit stuff that's not, doesn't have educational value with, other topics that are more, more historical or whatever. Sure. So they're conflating all of that.
Sure. Well, and it's great to see parents fighting and starting to win across the state. Aaron, appreciate it so much.
Yes. Thanks, Brandon.
Could a $25 billion surplus mean property tax relief for Texans? I talked with Tim Hardin, the president of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, to talk about what the legislature could do to give relief to taxpayers. Tim, a $25 billion surplus, that sounds like a lot, I would say. Sounds like a lot of money to me. What does that actually mean in terms of the state of Texas and Texas's budget?
So, when you look at it, we have to be specific on what this actually is. And so essentially there's talk around Austin and they projected this actually last year, the controller did, where we're looking at probably about a $12.5 billion surplus. And then that's added to the balance of the Economic Stabilization Fund, which is about $12.5 billion as well. And so the combined, we have a net surplus of about $25 billion. And what that means is there's a whole lot of money that all the politicians want to spend this next go round. It's seen as a big slush fund. And so we have a lot of free capital And they're going to have to make a decision on how to spend that this next legislative session.
Well, what normally happens when the state, I mean, we've had surpluses in the past. What normally happens to that money?
It's usually allocated to the biggest need. Oftentimes it's, education or TRS, or, you know, in the Harvey era, we put some towards Harvey relief. So it really just depends on, where the biggest ask is coming from and where they're feeling the most pressure. But, one of the biggest gripes from the grassroots and from fiscal conservatives and organizations like TFR is things like the Economic Stabilization Fund, which was meant to be an emergency fund, is tapped as more of a slush fund when we have shortcomings for ongoing legislative appropriations that should be dealt with in the budget. They just rob these surpluses and funds instead of just making cuts and being fiscally responsible.
And so, okay, let's say this is true. They come in, they have a $23, $24, $25 billion surplus. What, the thing is, the government collects this extra money, right? I think the thinking on a lot of people's minds is, well, you took too much. How are we going to give this back to the taxpayers?
Well, absolutely. There's the number one way they can give money back to the taxpayers is by giving relief, specifically, I would argue, on property taxes, right? But the real question at hand we have to ask ourselves when dealing with budgetary concerns is, as fiscal conservatives, is the government too big? And I've never heard a fiscal conservative say anything other than yes. And what we need to do is we need to give the money back to taxpayers. And the biggest gripes and the grassroots is calling for the elimination of the property tax, specifically the school M&O portion of the property tax. And I believe it was Chairman Rinaldi just tweeted out, he made the comparison that we have roughly $25 billion in surplus expected, and the property tax collected in 2019 for school districts was, I believe, 31. So we could almost wipe out 1 year right there just with the money on hand. Mm-hmm. And it's the conservative thing to do. We don't need to fund more corporate welfare or more subsidies. We have a lot of that in the budget. What we need to do is restrain ourselves and give this money back to who is it actually is, which is the taxpayers. It needs to go back to the taxpayers' hands.
Mm-hmm. And these sorts of surpluses, because look, we did just have, to your point, grassroots has spoken out on this, Republican Party of Texas ballot proposition. You had a big majority of Republican voters saying, please, let's eliminate property taxes. A lot of the people who I've talked to who said they voted no on that simply for the reason that they didn't believe it could be done. And yet we're seeing with these surpluses that it can be done. And there was something done last session, a bill dealing with the state spending limit that might make this a fixture, make these kind of surpluses a fixture going forward.
Yeah, you're referring to Senator Hancock's bill that placed a limit on the growth of government at population plus inflation growth, right? And so this is what produced that big $8 billion surplus that was originally estimated at the end of this session. Now mm-hmm. they're thinking it's going to be closer to 12, 12 and a half due to extra revenue they weren't accounting for. And so what this part of TFR's plan to eliminate property taxes. There's been calls in the past to replace this tax with a consumption-based tax or a VAT tax or something else. But I think what we're showing is with government constraints and with this new spending limit in place, we're going to have perpetual surpluses. And if we would be responsible and take these surplus dollars and apply them down to compression rates on property taxes, it's possible to eliminate the school property tax completely without introducing any new tax, which would ultimately be the best solution, in my opinion.
Lawmakers often talk about slowing the growth of spending in Austin. But you mentioned it that most people say no, they actually want government to be smaller. Is there anybody right now talking about, making the state budget actually smaller or making government programs smaller?
Well, we have begun speaking about that. And it's based on the question I asked you earlier. Is government too big? If we just simplify and ask that question, all conservatives are going to answer yes. So if that's the answer, and we know that government is too large, then why would we slow the growth of government if we know we need to make cuts? The most practical solution, and something we're going to be talking about a lot in the coming months, is the concept of a no growth budget. We're sitting in about $248 billion biennially. And if government is too big, then why don't we stop in its tracks and start going the other way? At some point, conservatives are going to have to go on offense and quit playing defense. And that's what that strategy of capping or slowing growth is. It's simply a defensive play to try and stop or slow down the growth, when the reality is what needs to happen is we need to cut and we need to go on offense. And so we need to shrink the size of government, not limit its growth, or else we're going to be in a situation in decades like the federal government, where this, you know, multi-trillion dollar deficit just keeps growing and growing, and there's no effort to curtail it and to go the other way.
What can citizens who want to voice their opinion on this, what can they do to get involved in this process?
So, you know, the closer we get to session, I would say interacting with your lawmakers after we get past elections. But I think, you know, more recently, especially if you're involved in the Republican Party process, we do have the conventions process. The precinct conventions already happened. Many people are having their Senate conventions. And of course, the state convention is coming up in June. And the biggest thing I would push for if I was a grassroots conservative is putting these as planks in the Republican Party platform, and also pushing to make these legislative priorities so we can clearly state to lawmakers what we want, which is fiscal responsibility and fiscal sanity at the state level.
Excellent. We look forward to talking later more about the no growth budget. Thank you so much for joining, Tim.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it.
Well, that's all we have on this episode of The Headline. I want to let folks know that we are hiring here at Texas Scorecard. You can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to see what's available, what we're looking for. Perhaps you'd be a good fit. I'd love you to check it out there. As well as if you are between the ages of 18 to 25 or you know someone who is, we're accepting applications for our fellowship for the fall as well as next spring. You can learn more about that program and find out how to apply at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. For right now, have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.